Honorable members, good morning. And good morning from Telco, Eskom, sorry. Eskom delegation. Mr. Chope and your team. I'm Priscilla Kemba. Can someone close the door? I'm Priscilla Kemba, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises. Usually, before we start, we introduce ourselves so that when we interact, we know who we're talking to, and we also know who you are talking to. I represent Mpumalanga Province in the National Council of Provinces, and I'm the chairperson. Honourable member, Honourable Spender, can you introduce yourself?
Good morning. My name is Mtikeni Patrick Sibande. I'm the member of this committee, originally I'm from Mpumalanga Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Zola Mlenzana, representing the province of the Eastern Cape, a member of this select committee. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, member of this committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Morning, Chair and everybody. I'm Buisela Jacob, a member of the committee representing the Free State.
Me?
Morning, Chair. My name is Louis Maleka. I'm the acting divisional executive in distribution business in Eskom.
Good morning,
Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chusa Chwewu. I'm the divisional executive for corporate affairs.
Morning, Chair. My name is Papa Lars Bulunga. I'm human resources for Eskom.
Morning, my name is Sam from TPE.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Chidza, the shareholder.
Good morning, Chair and the committee. Andrew Etzinger from Eskom Integrated Demand Management.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Trish Govender, and I look after project development for Eskom.
Morning, Chair, honourable members. My name is Isaac Sokoko. I'm corporate specialist, electrification and regulation.
Good morning. My name is Ronaldo Rito. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Morning, Chair. My name is Karen de Villiers, and I'm parliamentary affairs manager for Eskom.
Morning, my name is Lauren. I work for Bloomberg as a reporter.
Wendell Little, Reuters.
Matalam Vanilla, senior advisor on public affairs, Eskom.
I'm Simon Abbott from the parliamentary monitoring group.
Abra, SABC. Francis Wesh, GCIS.
Andrea Yadan, SABC Radio.
Thank you very much. When tea arrives, I think it has arrived, then we will grab our tea and then we will start. Because I don't want us to start and then just leave in the middle. But can we just go and grab our teas and come in? I wonder why are they late? SABC, we are also invited for tea. Thank you.
can you ask her to call me again? But I can't call her to call me. I got out of the room, so she didn't know why I had to call. Thank you.
On, then we will stand up one by one when they arrive with everything. Otherwise, we won't have the business of the day fulfilled. Mr. Malika, are you ready? Okay, members, we have ESCOM. Why do I like to say Telcom? ESCOM, with us. Because Telcom is also our entity. ESCOM, they're going to present to us their electrification program, capacity expansion program, update on the labor unrest. That's what we're going to hear today. Right? We are joined by the whip. You know, if we don't introduce the whip of the committee, you'll be in trouble. So, Honorable Mabija from Limpopo. Honorable Mabija, member of this committee and a whip of this committee. So, the main person. And you know about electricity, we come from the rural provinces. We come from areas where people see you, they want to know what is happening, when is their villages are going to be electrified. So by today's program presentation, I hope we're going to have answers when we go back home, like this is the end of next week is the end. And then there we will be interacting with our constituencies. And I hope we will have enough information to share with them. Over to you, Mr. Malik.
Maybe first of all, we need to apologize for the absence of our chief executive officer and chairperson. There was another engagement which was clashing with us with the Department of Public Enterprises. So we apologize this morning, ask me to present this apology and leave the delegation on that.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that. But also, I must just raise that your delegation, you know, Elvin Wenziza. I wonder why. But maybe whilst you are talking to us, you will explain, because you know we must have gender balance in all our delegations. We must recruit women also to be in the decision making positions. So when you come to this committee, select committee, you must know that we're looking at the gender balance. Over to you, Dr. Malik.
Thanks, Chair, and the honorable members of the committee. We're really excited to come and share with yourselves as to how we're doing in terms of electrification and two other projects that will be presented by my colleagues. I will lead on electrification programs and share with yourselves as to how we're doing in the provinces. In 1990, when we started with our program, we called it Electrification for All. And in that era, we had a lot of takeovers of the then TBVC areas as well as the then black local authorities. And there was hardly really a good penetration of electrification projects in those areas. And we, as ESCOM, funded the program from 1990. When the energy white paper was developed around December 1998, we looked at new programs of funding this program because it was a huge program to be run without proper policy and direction. And the third part was that the National Electrification Fund was established and aligned with the budget with the municipalities. We worked with them in terms of their IDPs. And the last part was that we started implementing. Now, the minister, Honorable Minister of DOE, established then a committee called NIC, which is an advisory committee, which was meant to direct and guide the program throughout from then to date. And focus mainly was on the backlog in the rural areas, where I think there was a huge bias towards that, and also the prioritization of the zone, of the nodal zones. And one other aspect of it was that the maximization of available infrastructure. We had a lot of challenges in terms of backbone infrastructure to support the new entries into access to electricity. And the program also aligned with the IDPs, that is the integrated development plans of the municipalities, and again the government priorities as they're in and out. This slide seeks to inform us that the last 6 years since 2006, this is how much we've been spending on the electrification program. You will realize that there is an increase of expenditure from 893 million to 1.7 billion current year. And the average connection covered by this amount is about 100,000 connections per annum, and we'll explain why the increase of expenditure and a decrease or a constant connection numbers of connections. When we started in 1994, the dark green on your screen showed that from 1994 to 2000, this is the program that was run by ESCOM. An average connection then was about 250,000 to 300,000 per annum. 2001, we then handed over the program to our colleagues in DOE to run the program. And you can see that the connections continued. Of note is that the expenditure increased, but the connections actually decreased. And one of the reasons is that 2000, we completed most of the congested urban areas and some of the rural areas that had the infrastructure nearby. And as we continue in 2001, we were now going deep rural where we did not have infrastructure. We had to establish the grid for access, and this started becoming too expensive in terms of cost per connection. The total investment from 1991 to 2011, which is to date, we already spent about 13.5 billion rands on this program. And as we stand now, ESCOM has electrified 4 million houses in this area of operations where we are licensed. And for us, it's quite a huge milestone in terms of improvement of the lives of our people. Then we had another program under the electrification program, which is the schools and the clinics. Since 91 to date, per province, we've electrified 11,000 schools and 400 clinics.
This program is largely directed by the Department of Education, and we get the allocations of the numbers from them, and we are the agent to electrify. Now, coming back to the provincial numbers, in South Africa we have almost 12.8 million households in our area of supply, which is Eskom and municipalities. And there's a backlog of 2.5 million in total that is now in the area of Eskom supply authority. To date, total, we have electrified 83.38% of South Africa. But you will realize that per province, there is a difference in terms of the numbers. For instance, Eastern Cape has a huge backlog, followed by Mpumalanga. KZN, which is KwaZulu-Natal, 24%. And Gauteng also, because of the new establishments, is also following through. So in terms of penetration to other provinces, we have made significant and substantial progress in as far as electrification program is concerned. If you look at the Western Cape, we are almost close to 100% all households electrified, and Northwest 86%, Limpopo 82%, Northern Cape 87%, Mpumalanga 82.6%, KwaZulu-Natal 76%, which is a worry for us, Gauteng is 86%, Free State is 84%, and Eastern Cape 69.7%. So Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal are our main focus moving forward. But we will highlight the challenges that we face in electrification in terms of accelerating universal access, which will include backlog and growth. These are the numbers that we still need to connect the province. As highlighted earlier, that we have 2.5 million, which is the backlog. Now, there's two issues. In that 2.5 million, we have areas that are proclaimed as habitable by the municipalities, and houses are being built. And we have areas that are people that are coming and squatting, and these are called unproclaimed. We are also directed by the bylaws of the municipalities on this one. And that 2.5 million households connections in terms of backlog includes both proclaimed and unproclaimed. The 1.8 million, which is our accelerated program in terms of sorting out the backlog, is in the proclaimed, and the balance is in the unproclaimed. So there is a lot of challenges in terms of policy that we need to really relook at how we address unproclaimed areas within the district municipalities and so forth. This is just to show the point that I was raising around proclaimed and unproclaimed. Now, if we look at this program, nationally there's about 3.4 million households that are without electricity. And our Eskom portion is 2.5 million and the balance of 900,000 is with municipalities, which we are partners in terms of ensuring that we electrify both areas. And Salga had a presentation and they presented their case last time we were here, Chair, to DOD and economies. For us to achieve the universal access goal, we are of the opinion that we need, I would call it accelerated funding. At the rate we are going, it will take us more than the year stipulated in terms of our target of 2014 to achieving universal access. And this is mainly because of funding. We need more money to do all the outstanding households growth plus the backlog. And we are of the opinion that if we put more money, we can do more than what we are doing currently, both Eskom and the municipalities. And this is the area that we will probably have to engage with DOE moving forward and Treasury to find a way of coming up with bridging funding to accelerate universal access 2014 and beyond. Challenges in terms of the infrastructure. Due to inadequate funding, the infrastructure in most of the areas is requiring more investment in terms of strengthening. And also access by new establishments such as housing and so forth. And also the infrastructure in the former TVBC area still require a lot of attention, particularly in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. In our minds, we are clear that we have robust strengthening, refurbishment programs to ensure that the infrastructure is ready to take on these new connections, but we need more money to continue to establish new connections. So this is the story in terms of electrification for now. We've just given a high-level provincial breakdown of the outstanding connections, and we are clear that there is a lot of challenges moving ahead in Eskom areas of supply, which are mainly the rural areas that we have at the moment. Now, the 2011-2012 program is mainly going to focus, by and large, in the rural areas. And as I said, we can only connect up to 100,000 connections per annum with that kind of investment. Now, to do more than that, you would need more injection in terms of infrastructure as well as connections. Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members.
Okay, I don't know whether you want to go to the second part of the presentation, which is the first problem.
Yeah, let's go to the second
part. All the presentations?
Yes.
Okay. At this point in time, we'll give over to Chris, my colleague, over the second part of our presentation.
Okay.
And we do apologize, and I think that because one or two other presentations did not have some slides, but we included yesterday evening, and we will make sure that members will get those slides. Talking about three additional slides. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Today, I'm going to take you through a few elements on the presentation, and just to summarize, I'm going to talk to a snapshot of the capital expansion program. I'm going to take you through some detail on the major projects. We're going to talk about the impact of these projects on the economy, some challenges, and then I'm going to make some concluding remarks. But just in terms of South Africa's future, in terms of electricity supply, we have recently gazetted policy-adjusted IRP 2010 that shows us that we need to create significant amount of megawatts from now until 2030. It almost doubles the current requirements, and it includes the decommissioning of some of Eskom's bigger coal-fired stations. With this in mind, as Eskom, we've always been clear that the system is going to be tight in terms of reserve margin between the two periods indicated on the slide. And we also say that it's going to take the collaborative effort of all South Africans with urgent action required this year to start making plans, putting in plans to develop and construct stations in line with the IRP 2010 process. Just to give a snapshot of the capacity expansion program, you see from the left-hand side, we've brought into service certain mothball stations. We're building new coal-fired plants in line with international standards in terms of technology. We are in the process of building peaking and renewable energy plants. We're looking at the refurbishment of some of our existing coal-fired stations. We're also looking at expanding the transmission grid quite significantly. On this slide, we just aim to illustrate how we managed to bring in megawatts as per the financial years indicated at the bottom of the slide
It also shows that the kilometers of line that's been constructed and completed, and the substations that have been completed in terms of MVAs, which is in fact transformer capacity. Next slide. On this slide, we've tried to illustrate quantum in terms of total spend and the money that have been spent to date on some of our bigger works, like Medupi Kusile, Ingula, some of the return to service, which is the older mothball stations and transmission. You see that we've committed a lot of cash to be able to deliver on these stations and have spent significant amount of that cash already. On this slide, we try and illustrate to you how the capacity will be phased in over a period of time, and I'm just going to look at maybe two of the bigger stations. You would see that Medupi, first unit will be in service by the financial year 12-13, with the last unit coming in 15-16. Kusile will be in the year 14-15, and the last units coming in the years 18-19. So I think from this slide we can conclude that we've done a lot of work to date on bringing in a lot of capacity, but still a lot more work needs to be done to make sure that the other units are brought into the system timeously. On this slide, we just show to the committee a lot of the transmission infrastructure that needs to be built, and really what that can be broken down to is the integration of some of these major power stations, a lot of work in integrating these power stations, building up the major corridors, or what we call backbones, to evacuate the power to the major load centers, and then doing some local work at the load centers to make sure that they are now able to receive some of that megawatts that's transmitted across long networks. I'm just going to focus now on the three big build generation capacity projects, which is Medupi, Kusile, and Ingula. And you can see that looking at the number of partners / contractors that we need to support us in the build program, that these build programs reach far into the economy. We have significant support both from some local companies as well as international companies, and those companies are illustrated on this graph. But I'm now going to take you through some detail on some of the major projects, and we start with Medupi. Medupi is obviously been located and been built in Lepalali, which is in the Limpopo province. It's a 6-unit, pulverized fuel coal-fired station, incorporating the latest technology in terms of the use of water, as well as environmental limits, or preventing or working within the current environmental limits. You see that it's quite a huge project in terms of money, and it also has a very huge impact on the local Lepalali town, and I'll come to some detail later. A bit about the construction. We've started the construction in March 2007. We mobilized onto site. First unit planned for December 2012, and subsequent units coming between 6 to 9 months interval thereafter. Kusile in Delmas, in Mpumalanga province, very similar design to Medupi, 6-unit coal-fired station. Lots of money in terms of requirements for its build. Construction commenced a year later than Medupi. First unit planned for 2014. We talk about Ingula. It's a pump storage scheme. 4-unit pump storage station used in peaking as a peak load station. Construction commenced in mid-2006. And the first unit to be commissioned in January 2014. Return to service, these are the previously mothballed stations. Camden, we're happy to say, is now in full commercial operation, performing far more than what we initially anticipated, far more better than what we initially anticipated. We've successfully managed to commission 3 units at amount of transformers for all of the major grids, significant amount of transmission line installation as well. And we've also indicated for you there at the bottom of the transmission slide some of the timelines when we expect these projects to be completed. In Mpumalanga, we're also looking at making sure that we keep our existing coal-fired stations running as efficiently as possible by making sure that we spend the necessary money on refurbishments. We're also looking at some capacity increase on our existing coal-fired stations at Arnott. We're also looking at transporting a lot of coal via rail to take the trucks off the road and thus prevent safety incidents. We're also looking at doing a few greenfield sites in the form of renewable projects, which is the 100 megawatts wind farm Sere project on the west coast and 100 megawatts concentrated solar plant, which is really in the pilot phase at the moment in time. So needless to say, as I've been indicating, that the capital expansion program will have a significant impact on the local industry in terms of skills, new skills being created, new jobs, infrastructure put into place, and regional and local development. If we move over to the next slide, we see by taking Medupi, a large share of Medupi, Kusile, and Angola spend will go to the local economy, thereby also benefiting local construction companies. We've just shown you, by way of illustration on the pie charts, where we have, and we've just taken some examples of major contracts, like the major civil works on Medupi, the major civil works on Kusile, and the access roads package on Angola, and we've tried to illustrate to you how much of that is actually being spent and done locally. So you can see it's quite a considerable portion. We're also creating many skills. And to that end, we've established new fabrication shops locally and also training facilities. Fabrication shops that specialize in highly technical operations of welding, and drilling, bending, and also on some of the mechanical equipment on the right-hand side of the slide, you see that how much of local content has been included in the procurement of those major mechanical equipment. We can also conclude that this program, in its enormity and size, will fuel demand for relevant graduates and artisans and will grow the widely required skills base for the country. You can see that Medupi in itself will consume 43% of a year's equivalent university graduation, engineering, project planning, deploy 48% of the year's output of our artisans, rapidly grow South Africa's supply of engineers, artisans, R&D and project management experts, and develop a wide range of additional skills through SDSA commitments. So definitely, looking at universities, a lot of collaboration is required with the universities and some of the associations that have been sent up to look at training and development. Just looking at the number of direct and indirect jobs that is likely to come out of this program, just considering the major expenditure, which is Medupi, Kusile, and Angola. You can see on the direct side, you've got a considerable amount of people and taking Medupi, a total of 1,000 people. On an indirect basis, in the area of social services and local businesses, and then using multiplier effects in terms of family members, you can see that these projects will directly touch the life of 160,000 people. So it's quite considerable. And that's not counting all of the transmission and distribution work that we are busy also undertaking. Medupi and Kusile and Angola, like I've mentioned, will have an impact on national infrastructure, but also on local infrastructure, national in the form of roads maintenance, freight forwarding, trains, local in terms of catering, hotels, local transport, vehicle maintenance, housing, and other. Each project will measurably impact the local towns through local spend and investment, and you can see that the impact on local towns' GDP from each project, you can see that Lepalali, 95% impact through Medupi, Delmas, 25%, Ladysmith, 7%, and the other business that spins off from these projects are catering, laundry, building companies, house maintenance, hotels, entertainment, so far-reaching impact into the local economy. The expansion program has come not without its challenges. I think Eskom has gone a long way since its inception of the program to try and understand these challenges and put together a mitigating plan to deal with them. But just to talk you through some of these challenges to sensitize the committee members, the market within which Eskom is operating is extremely tight, with significant demands on supply capacity and basic commodities being a feature since 2005. I think the common perception out there is that we have now supply exceeding demand. Unfortunately, in this sector, the supply has just caught up with the demand. So these challenges are still prevalent. New thinking on contracting and risk sharing has become essential based on the following. Global demand for new plant, as I mentioned. The supplier market is definitely global and is limited. The supply market experiences shortages of materials, components, and engineering capacity. The skill shortage in the form of engineering capacity and artisans is something that's felt internationally when we look at infrastructure development and construction. Fixed price or construction commitments cannot be secured. At the time of placing the Medupi and Kusile major contracts, it was a challenge to acquire fixed price contracts, simply because suppliers didn't want to take the long-term commodity exposures that come with these type of contractors, with these type of contracts. So these risks then pass on to the owner, and the owner has to now find ways to deal with these risks. Increased demand for power plants leading to significant escalation in prices, and this is the whole supply and demand balance that I was talking about. Seller's market, not a buyer's market. Contract and risk-sharing profiles fundamentally changed. I think the appetite to perform Medupi on a full turnkey basis was not in the market at the time of contracting. And I think timeline, given the reserve margin, the Eskom Bill program is working with very tight lines, consistently tight lines. Funding, Eskom clearly found itself in a very challenging funding environment until October 2010. Eskom did not have a full funding plan to complete the capacity expansion program. It now has one. So we've managed to have a funding plan or get a funding plan in place for all of our commitments up until the end of Kusile. Safety is still a very much important issue for us to manage in the construction as well as in the operation and maintenance environment. So it poses a significant risk to our people, and it's not something that we as a company take lightly. We address this at all levels within the company, and it's a matter of creating a culture where safety becomes ingrained into the minds of our people. Skills development. The Bill program is used to contribute to skills development and facilitate manufacturing capability in South Africa. I spoke at length about that. Skills remains a significant factor for Eskom. The competition for skills is fierce. South Africa is not the only country that's building infrastructure. It's being done at a large scale throughout the world, and hence these skills are actually a commodity. Local communities, the new bill will impact on local communities in a massive way in terms of housing, education, safety, health services, and social impacts. So in conclusion, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the new bill program is significant by any measure. Compared internationally, it is still significant. Cost increases, as a company, we understand them better, and we've taken them into account in our budget planning. Lessons have been learned, but they have been learned and have been implemented for future projects and across existing projects as well. We've made good progress, But there are still significant risks that we have to manage at a project level. We have strong mitigating measures in place to manage these risks. We have internationally reputable partners helping us to manage these risks that have dealt with these projects previously. The global financial crisis has affected the entire world, and we are not isolated. It's brought contractions to the market. We had to reprioritize certain of our capacity projects. We had to delay some of the projects at a certain time since 2005, but we now have a funding plan in place. And all systems are definitely go to bring this capacity expansion to fruition. Macroeconomic factors do still play an impact, still have a significant impact. We still have a large portion of our unspent money on contracts still exposed to cross price adjustments and in the form of commodities. We still are exposed to Forex, and these things still play a major role in us managing to execute the bill program successfully. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Chair. We'll go on now to the last presentation. Mr. Bulunga will take us through.
Thank you, Chair. We have experienced labor unrest on our two projects which we're going to update, which is Medupi, around April and May. In both sides were disrupted by labor protests. But we must say that even though disrupted and we've lost some time, there were delays, but we in no way threatened the completion as per commitment. The ESCOM's new build project, in all of them we have the PLA, which is the Project Labor Agreement, that governs every contractor that is signed on site. This relates in the main on how we recruit internally within the country, as well as when we have to recruit expatriates. In particular, in Medupi, where we had the disputed issue about the artisans, we do have a shortage of particular skills, and in particular this time round is the welding artisans that we need, a specialized welding for the equipment that we are putting in both sides. Madam Chair, just to go to the background on Kusile, what exactly happened. The spark basically was due to the demobilization time, because each contractor has got time, and also once it has completed work, we then have to consult on demobilization. In other words, that's the end of work by that particular contractor. That was basically the start, which was a rush one. Once we've done that, we had to apply, or the contractors had to apply the no work, no pay as per the PLA. Then it also further caused sort of dissatisfaction. The union and the employees wanted, in fact, to be paid for the time that they were not working. In Medupi on the 10th, the event in Medupi, the site ceased to work, and the project employees were evacuated from the following the violent protest by contractor workers that took place on Tuesday, the 10th of May. The claims were made as such that these aforementioned trades are not scarce in South Africa. In other words, the welding was an issue that the workers thought they were not scarce in South Africa. And then the opportunities were supposed to have been given to fellow South Africans. The event was subsequently taken to a grievance regarding the expatriate employees on site. There was a series of engagements regarding the dissatisfaction by some of the contractor employees around the tie welders, riggers, and pipe fitters. The root cause is attributed to a failure by both labor and contractors to consistently apply the project labor agreement that's applicable on all sites. Although the PLA provides for engagement and dispute resolution, this is not always adhered to by the parties. Implementation and management of PLA will be closely monitored by ESCOM as we go forward. Clear requirements have been set of what is expected from the contractors prior to return on site. Over 2,000 workers in Gusile, contractors have been terminated, and they are resuming recruitment and employment of contractors, including some of the terminated employees. Madam Chair, in Medupi, the action was as a result of the Hitachi subcontractor, which is Marian Roberts' project employees, having grievance in respect, as I've said, on the welding. The employee had demanded that all expatriate artisans at Medupi project should be removed from the project. The Medupi response team and the police were immediately deployed on site. All contractors on site were advised to evacuate. This was basically done due to safety consideration. To better manage such occurrences going into the future, a JOC has been formed. In addition, there have been continuous engagement and workshop with the contractors to ensure that the requisite emergency measures are able to be deployed effectively. Marian Roberts project have obtained an interdict at the time and are now working through the agreements so that when retaining the workers, there is protocol that is observed for the future. In conclusion, Madam Chair, as ESCOM, we are confident that the disturbances that had occurred or still maybe to occur will be better managed and also will not delay the implementation and construction of the site. So we will deliver on time. But I would not sort of stand here and promise that on any construction site there will be no industrial action. But it will be better managed.
Thank you very much. Members, we have been listening to ESCOM. Very well, sir. Now is the time. Honorable Sibande, Honorable Mlenzana, Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Jacobs, in that order. I'll come at you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I may not like to commend it. Thank the ISCOM to come and give us this presentation. But nevertheless, there are areas of clarity where we want to have some clarity. You see, Chairperson, allow me to you to ask very few questions about, from ISCOM. Number one, there's something which is worrying me if they talk about backlogs. I'll put a practical example. I'm from Mpumalanga. Some people are not aware that in Mpumalanga itself, it's plus minus 11 power stations. But we're still experiencing the problem of electricity. Namely, we got Green Power Station, Matla, Kendall, Komati, Camden, Hoedvlei, Thuthukani, Arnold, Hendrina, Dover, and Ngusile. But still, there are bedrocks. I believe that charity begins at home. And ISCOM is having capacity to sell electricity in SADC. But it's failing to provide electricity just around the corner. That is the first one. Number two, Madam Chair, which is worrying me, ISCOM, in their presentation on page 6, they spoke about 100,000 connections. I'll request the presenters to further elaborate, because there are two types of categories in terms of connections. For an example, they never indicated for us that how many power stations which need refurbish, or in fact, you see, who needs service. Because I know that when they're going to service power station, it needs billions, because they're supposed to switch it off. They cut it off. All the units that are being cut off, and some of the things, they start afresh. They never indicated us to give us, maybe the, if they can, I would be happy if they can give us a background. And then another thing which is worrying me, I wanted to ask from ISCOM that, as you indicated, about the skills development. In the last presentation, there's something which is worrying me about the incident which took place at Usile on the 6th May with companies which include Group 5, WBHO, and Stepanuti stocks. Yes, there is a challenge. In your own input, you spoke about the skills development. But at the same time, there is a challenge. To me, it's a contradiction. This side, you speak about skills development. The other side, you don't give other. You bring people from outside who have simple, mere skills, like welding, pipe fitting. So where does it get in? Where does it fit about skills development? Because to me, it's a contradiction. Because if you were providing, maybe if you were providing skill development, we wouldn't expect such thing. And then also, if you can indicate that the damage, which estimated damage which was there, because most of the time said we infrastructure was, but somewhere we got the information that the two mobile cranes and vehicles, I don't know how many vehicles, at Kusile in particular, were put in fire. The damage, because I think that the damage is also having a negative impact in that regard. And the other one is that, may you please assist me as a layman on the street. Do you have a risk management? And time and again, Madam Chair, I will ask that question, because some people, if you ask about risk management, it's very difficult to come up. They will tell that we have a sort of a skeleton, but who constitutes it? Who are the people who compromise it, who constitute that skills management? Because that's where we will say that if the center holds, if the center is failing, that's where we're going to experience some of the problems. The last one is that I wanted maybe, Madam Chair, because it is alleged that ISCOM buys electricity from and also sells electricity to the countries of the Southern Africa. buy electricity, and so that we can be in a position to know that from our side, from our own initiative, own power station, how much do we get as in our income? Because we can't just buy. We must, if they can clarify us that how much is being spent by buying from them. And then lastly, who is responsible in that project of Kobarabasa? Is our project, or is a foreign, is a project that belongs to SADC somewhere in Mozambique, whatever, Maputo? I will end there. Maybe, Madam Chair, with your permission, I will come later so that I can allow my colleagues to come, because I've just piled some few questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe let me put it the other way around, but the same sentiment raised by Honorable Sibanda, that Chairperson, this presentation is a high level kind of a presentation. It would be very good for the portfolio committee, but for us, the select committee, people who represent the interests of province, it now becomes a bit shallow. Maybe when you prepared, you felt that it would be boring if you dig deep, whereas that's what we want. We want the detail. We are counting days now before we go for the constituency period, wherein we'll be visiting some of the areas that we would like to get explanations about.
Let me appreciate Chairperson,
the recognition by ESCOM of the backlog, particularly in the Eastern Cape.
With your respect, Chairperson, I just switch off when you talk all other provinces. I only,
open up my eyes and ears when you talk Eastern Cape. That's what I'm here for, would I say.
One would like, Chairperson, a very, very, very clear and thorough report on the electrification of clinics and schools. Dr. Isaac Sokopo would know.
We have been fighting around this for years now, when I was still with the Department of Education.
We need to know when they are talking about which schools. Which schools are in the pipeline? Which schools are in the near future? Which schools are not even their plan?
The same with clinics.
The second one would be also on substations. One would know that if you are going to just spread the wires without the power base, then just by 1 minute wind, it's all gone. The other thing, Chairperson, is around demarcation. This is not the first time that we're raising this with ESCOM, particularly as the Eastern Cape. Your demarcation of your rights, particularly when you look at the eastern part of the Eastern Cape, where you would have your demarcation flowing from KZN, getting deeper into the Eastern Cape, up to the Tina River, subject then the communities. Your material so-called dissatisfaction, somehow, ESCOM contributes, Madam Chair, because somebody from Matatiel, somebody from Mount Frere, has to go all the way to Margate if there are electricity challenges. somebody across Kumbu is serviced by Island. Now, you see the difference. And the natural phenomenon is that you know as ESCOM that you would always bow to heavyweights. So then it means somebody from Eastern Cape is not even known in KZN. Who are you to come and take issues to Eskom market? Rather go to Islander, and Islander will tell you we are not demarcated to service that particular area, though it is in the Eastern Cape. Chairperson, if Eskom could just briefly, you know, tell us about their policy on infills, because that also is a challenge. You will notice, Chairperson, that I'm deliberately going into these issues which affect our own people on the ground. And also, because of the delay of the electrification program, Chairperson, you would find that there are those individuals who would go all out legally so connect their households. I'm saying, Chairperson, legally so, because maybe their passes allow them. Do you have a policy guiding that? Then the other one would be, what does Eskom say about illegal connections? We had, Chairperson, an oversight visit to Limpopo. Was it Limpopo? No, it was Mpumalanga. It was Mpumalanga. Yes, that Block C. Where, you know, we were taken to areas where you have electric wires literally running on the ground. And we were told that there has been death because of illegal connections, particularly deaths of these young ones, the children. So if we could be briefed as to how is Eskom managing and controlling such. Lastly, Chairperson, on this labor unrest related issues, it's just a question of interest here, Chairperson. How is the relationship between Eskom and the Department of Labor, if there is any? I'm asking this, Chairperson, because I know that would Eskom have linked with the Department of Labor? And allow me, Chairperson, to allege that this didn't happen, because should it have happened, that labor unrest wouldn't have occurred. I'm raising this, Chairperson, because I know that the Department of Labor has a database of unemployed South Africans with all the type of skills that you want. And I personally feel that if Eskom is interested, if Eskom enjoins what the president of this country has actually pronounced in terms of job creation, you wouldn't have rushed to recruit from outside the country when the Department of Labor is having a database of unemployed South Africans. I'm saying, Chairperson, this is a serious allegation. I am saying an allegation, because I would apologize if when Eskom replies, they say to me, we have gone into all the corners of South Africa, but we couldn't get welders. Huh? Welders. You can't get welders throughout South Africa. Then you opt, you know, to import that particular skill. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm going to start with the labor violence and unrest at Medupi. I just want to know, when you've done your planning since 2007, it is possible with this size of project that anything can go wrong in up March to the implementing of the project. But I want to know, how was the planning being done when you look into the labor situation? You know exactly when you've done this planning. How many welders are you going to need, and what is the amount we've got in South Africa? And then, unfortunately, at the stage, we must get people in from our neighbor countries and overseas maybe, and then we've got this unrest. And at the end of the day, it cost the taxpayer, the consumer, millions of rands. And I would like to know how many rands do we lost in this violence and unrest we've had at the Medupi power station at this stage. I think that is a lot of money. And who's going to pay at the end of the day? That is, it's the taxpayer, and we must get that money from somewhere. And one of the questions you ask is, you are looking for more money. For more money, for more power stations, and at this stage you are very silent about nuclear. What about nuclear? I was in the position to visit the nuclear power station with this committee, and with another committee as well. In the last 6 months, I was twice I was at Kuba. And it seems to me everything is above board there, and it is running very smooth. Why are we not looking in more detail and tell the people of South Africa that nuclear is not so unsafe as we think it is? I think we must get into that and see. It is a clear way to give electricity to our consumers. It is not damaging the environment at all. I think we must take more notice of nuclear in South Africa at this stage. But I'm very worried about our rural areas as well. Things is not going well in our rural areas by supplying electricity. There's a lot of people who haven't, at this stage, who haven't got any electricity in the villages and all that kind of things. And I think we must really make an effort to see that we can produce electricity in these areas of in South Africa as well. Thank you.
Jacobs?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'm just going to ask a few questions. Most of my members have already asked what I wanted to ask. But the problem that I have, it is with regard to Eskom and municipalities. There is no synergy between Eskom and municipalities, because you find that in townships there is a new township which is being established, and Eskom takes a long time to provide electricity to those. It happens where I come from. People have to put pressure on the Eskom. It is then that Eskom had to respond, and currently there is a new village that is being built, and Eskom has not yet supplied electricity to that area. So that's why I'm interested, what kind of a synergy do you have with municipalities? We are talking about IDPs here, because the IDPs, they indicate to you that here during this time we are going to build so many houses. And how do you respond to that? So I've got a problem with that. The second one is the issue of the electricity that has been lost. As Eskom, do you have stats to say we have sold so much electricity to this industry or to this municipality? And how much have we made and how much have we lost? Because there's a lot of electricity which is lost in between. We are saying we are running short of electricity, but what are we doing with this electricity which has been stolen by people? And as Eskom, you are not responding to that. And I don't know, as Eskom, don't you have a new technology that can detect when somebody is stealing electricity? Because I think that's one thing that can help us. So it means it's up to you that you must be innovative and try to get companies that will be able to indicate to us that in this area, these people are misusing electricity. The third one is the issue of skills. I don't see Eskom having an aggressive program of addressing the skills, because this country is running short of skills. But as a state-owned and enterprises, I don't see having that aggressive program. For instance, we need to have interns we need to have to have artisans. For just like issue of welders, you go and import welders from neighboring countries. When we should be having our own artisans, when we should be having our own interns training them in ESCO. You know what was happening in the previous government? My grandfather worked for railway. He was not educated, but he was able to become a bricklayer. He was able to measure with a tape, not having gone to school. But in this country, we have so many youth who've got standard 10, who can be taken as interns, who can be taken as artisans. In that, we'll be producing the skills for ESCOM as well as for the country. Because I think the state-owned enterprises, that is their duty, to help the country to produce more skills. So I think it's important that we need to do that. The last one, I don't know what kind of sound relations do we have with your employees if we are having so many disputes, because that's going to have an impact on the completion of your projects. So if you don't have sound relations with your employees, these are the kind of responses that we are going to get. So I think if you don't have them, you have to improve on that so that we should be able to meet the target. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think on page 9 of the presentation, estimated percentage of electrified homes. This slide, actually, if you go back, if you can specify the areas of the in all provinces, I'm saying this because when we went on oversight to Mpumalanga, Ngoma's area, when the people were saying they want electricity, I found ESCOM, and the response was there is a list. There is a program of villages that are going to be electrified. So with that information, it can assist to inform communities of when will they, after this village, then comes this village. So if we don't have that information ourselves as public reps, then how do we inform the people? Hence, Honorable Mlenzana was saying this presentation actually, it's not for us, because what we want as members of the select committee, we want specifics. We want to know when is electricity going to be installed in Emafambisa. I'm telling you, Emafambisa at this moment, I won't go nearer, because the people when we went there, when I phoned ESCOM, they thought that ESCOM will come the next day. So please, if we can get this information before we again, let's say next week we are going, if we get per province, if we hear, we know that it has a view, this area is going to be electrified after this village. You know, if we have that program, we will be assisted. And then if also you're talking on slide 23, that the new welding training centers, you've got Midupi, you've got Kusile in these rural provinces, but these training centers, where are they built? Because definitely I feel they should be built in the area so that you develop skills. If it's Limpopo, the skills must come from, the people must come from Limpopo. If it's Kusile in Mpumalanga, you must train people of that area so that you create jobs. You can't go and build the training center outside the province. And you come and build the big Because I really don't understand why that does that have training facilities in Pretoria and what be. You see, these things must happen in the areas where the stations, these big, like Midupi, Kusile. Yes, people can come from outside, maybe from Gauteng to Mpumalanga to come and train, but not train outside and then you build the big station, Midupi station in Limpopo, and you expect people to come from outside to come and work, whereas the people in that area are living in poverty. And also, if maybe Eskom, if you can tell us, what do you do for the communities around those areas where you've got big stations, power stations? For example, Limpopo, Midupi. What have you done in that area? We went to Sikukuni. We would like to really know there is poverty there. There are no projects. People are actually, you know, wandering around. And then slide number 26. These houses that we are going to build, 3,300 houses that we are going to be built, you are going to build. Tell us where will these houses be, and by when will this be done? Yeah, slide number 27. This is really interesting. You know, also. Lipalale Kusile Lady Smith, if maybe we can hear program, if you have programs of training the communities around for catering, for laundries, for, you know, so that we know that our people there are going to benefit from this. You know, sometimes we get calls that there is a company that have donated computers to certain school, but you find there is no electricity. So we are really appealing to Eskom that in your plan, don't start your programs in where there is development. Start in the rural. The rural areas mustn't be the last resort. Honorable Mabija.
Thank you, Chairperson. On update on ESCOM's capital expansion program, the second page, I see that here, in line with the policy adjusted, there's a need to create 4,500 megawatts, I don't know if I'm correct, of new electricity capacity by 2030. And it goes down indicating what will happen from 2011 to 2018 to 2024. And then says South Africa needs to take urgent action. And I'd just like to indicate that this page has got a lot of I don't know how to put it. There are a lot of things that happen during supply interruptions, and I should say this urgent action, it needs to be there, and we are the people to drive this urgent action, because it has got a lot of implications on household members. I will give an example of what I'm going through now. On the 29th, thieves broke in my house. They took all the electricity appliances, TVs, everything, and clothes. And we were fast asleep. When we woke up, they were gone. And yesterday night, I received a call from home, Limpopo Vembe in Toyando, that there was supply interruption. And my granddaughter was shivering and trembling, and she wet her nighties because she thought those stars will come back again because it's in the, she's in the dark. And it means then psychologically that child is affected through supply interruption and the security of her security. She felt her security is now weak. So I just want to, what more about those who really stay in deep rural where there's no security at all? There are no street lights. They are just in the bundles. Those little children, when power is interrupted, what happens to them? And we know that when supply interruptions takes place, that's when these thugs take an advantage. I just want to let this help be aware that this thing has got an impact on the psyche of the person. They suffer psychological traumas due to this supply interruption. And remember, most of us, we do not have security guards in our homes. We are just on our own. So we must take this very seriously. This is the social aspect of it. Thank you.
Honorable Subande, how many do we have now?
Mine is a comment.
Don't comment now. You'll comment after they have. Can I give you just for two questions? Do you want to comment really after? Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as I indicated, that I don't want to finish everything I wanted to give our members, maybe to add. But there is one which is worrying me. If you recall well, we know very well that we are still struggling about the legacy, whereby they were putting small transformers, townships, and other things, and now the society is developing. I would be very much grateful if they can indicate to us that what programs do they have in terms of upgrading, besides reconnecting, upgrading transformers, and also in order to have volumes of megawatts, because the present one, that's why we're experiencing people like doing everything everywhere, while some of the transformers, they don't have capacity anymore. That is one. And then the second one, which maybe I wanted to request, is that how is the ESCOM responding on what was raised by the President of South Africa during the SONA, during the opening of Parliament, about the issue of job creation? ESCOM in particular, how many people, because this thing is creating a problem, we've never received a report that the ESCOM is responding in this number. I'll keep it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. When you respond to this one of job creation, if you can indicate to us how many jobs were created at Midupi, how many jobs were created at Kusile, and the other one, how many jobs were created at Ingula. And also, please indicate the gender part of it, the information on gender. Whether you're only looking at males or are there any females that are employed. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I think we will respond respectively with regards to the questions presentation. on electrification, I'll also request that Isaac should come in to support the issues as he is actually operational close to the issues. The first question from our Honorable Sibanda around deadlocks and the charity beginning at home is noted. We are working on the program. If you look at Mpumalanga, I think we have made substantial move in terms of electrification of households, and we are moving into those areas where we are having shortage. The power stations are different from the, maybe if you look at this slide that I flashed, 17, it shows you the congestion of our power stations, which connects to the national grid, and it goes to transmission. As you can see, there's corridors where you transmit electricity. Then the last part, which is the value in the value chain, is distribution, which is the connection to the houses. Now, I'll talk more around refurbishment, that we are refurbishing a lot of substations in those areas to cater for new development and new growth. We have robust programs which we will make sure that you, at the request, we can provide in terms of per province, how much are we investing in which areas to support substations and so forth for growth coming in the future. Risk management, we have in Eskom a robust risk management program. It's, I believe it's sufficient enough to capture and cater for all eventualities, and I think we are managing it well. The issues around exports and imports, I think Andrew will probably come in and help us at some point when we're done here and cover up our story. Then there was an issue around illegal connections. I think illegal connections are now going or transcending ESCOM's area of operations. We find them also in municipalities. But we are of the opinion that this is becoming a community issue. And I'll give you a story which moved us as in ESCOM. In Gippsland, 2 weeks back, there's a whole lot of Gippsland in Soweto next to in Johannesburg. A lot of illegal connections. Our teams with the police, with municipal city of Johannesburg, metros and so forth went in and removed these connections. Within no time, they were back on. And this is not happening only in Gippsland, all over the country, including Mpumalanga townships. We have major challenges in Kwamhlushwa and so forth. And in that time, when they started experiencing power failures because the transformers, which were designed for your normal households and properly so, were overburdened by these illegal connections, our technicians were held hostage. That's the hostility of the environment we're operating in. We had to really call in the police to come and assist us with that hostage situation. And to the point where we decided that we're no longer going to serve that environment until it's stabilized. To our abilities to manage it with City of Johannesburg and the councillors, we managed to stabilize. We are now operational, and the community has agreed to assist us. But the story, Chair, is not only about Gippsland, it's about the country. That throughout the townships, throughout the villages, there is a tendency of electricity being free and people just connecting themselves. We have robust programs. We have introduced a program called Operation Kanyisa. We are working with the police. We are working with the, in the farming environment, we are working with the soldiers and SNDF and so forth to deal with these matters. But in your illegal environment where you have illegal connections, the outcry mainly is electrification. People are saying, we want electricity. And said enough, like in Mpumalanga and in Mpopo, Tzaneen area, we are experiencing a lot of fatalities of children dying because of illegal connections. And we are endlessly having contractors going in, removing the illegal connections, talking to the communities and not having a proper response because the bottom line of it is they want electricity. And we can only go up to where the funding is made provided. And how does this work? DOE, well, the municipalities identify the areas to be electrified, and this will also address the issue around villages that are not electrified in new townships. DOE will fund the IDP program. We will have a Schedule A and Schedule B, which is a list of municipalities. We will be funding funded, the funding that I've indicated, and out of that funding, we will electrify what we have. So the number grows according to what is provided in the plans. The delays and probably the coherence of the programs, for instance, for the settlement, human settlement programs, where you have new establishments without infrastructure, this is something that we are working on with DOE as well as the department to try and make sure that when a new area is built, it comes with a total package, electricity included in it. And that will require more funding, and I think that's something that government as well as human settlement department will work on. The Eastern Cape issues, we are well aware of the challenges there. We have a policy in terms of infills. Eskom pays for the infills. These infills are those areas where after the infrastructure electrification program is completed in a specific area, then you find households that were not there during the time of the program are now built. We go in and electrify those households. So we do have the numbers. We'll also provide the committee with the numbers and also chair to provide you with at least specific numbers to the detail. We have them per province, per village, per township in terms of the numbers to support your public hearings. In terms of the policies of electrification delays, we work with different stakeholders, one being DOE, the funder, the municipalities, the originators of these programs. We, as agents, will coordinate the programs and begin with the infrastructure. So we depend largely on the whole value chain of electrification program, which I believe at this stage, if we want to achieve universal access, we need to accelerate the processes, including the funding thereof. Again, the demarcation issue, I think we all know that the RETs, originally we intended to have 6 RETs throughout the country embedded on the footprint of the metros, the big metros. At the time, the boundaries were drawn by EDI in terms of how we should operate. So Eskom aligned itself in terms of around the EDI holdings boundaries. Now, seeing that the decision was made that the rest are being discontinued, we are re-looking at our strategy to precisely address the issue of our honorable member indicating the demarcation and the challenges that they are facing in terms of customer services. We are busy really working hard on improving our customer services. We have our contact centers, walk-in centers. These are the areas where an office where a person can walk in, and we believe that they, according to the customer segmentation, they should have, we call them franchise model, where you have the same outlook. If you walk into a Kentucky, it's a Kentucky. It doesn't matter where it is. So that's what we are striving for, to say walk in an Eskom office, you can be served by anybody from any part of South Africa. And that is working. The issue around metering to cap the issues around illegal connections, we are now busy rolling out smart metering. This is a system where you can actually detect precisely what the honorable member has said, that we can actually detect tampering of our networks as well as response. But as with any technology, you will always have people. If you remember when we introduced prepaid meters, we all thought this is magic. It will resolve all issues around debt management. Sadly so, it wasn't. People find creative ways of still bypassing the same meters. So we will continue with continuous innovation and improvement on technologies to assist us. But as long as we don't have community will to assist and back us up in the communities to deal with these issues, we'll forever pump money into resolving the issues. But the issue is more behavior than technology. You can go to areas where there is stability and put the simplest technology and still have continuity of supply. So we need to work together as community leaders, stakeholders, to deal with some of the behavioral issues that we are encountering in our environment. Rural electrification, I think Isaac will give more details on that, as well as how the IDP program works
and the schools as well as the clinics. The numbers that you have seen, those are the ones that we have already electrified. So it's not a backlog. Since inception to date, we have electrified 11,000 schools. And that program it's been driven largely by our stakeholders, and we are agents to assist them on that. Energy losses, as I said, we've got mechanisms to determine what comes in from the grid, that is now from transmission as well as distribution systems into the reticulation. This is now the part that goes into the households. We do have mechanism to determine what was in and what was out, and the losses, again, it comes back to policy. Electricity is not a criminal act at the moment. People still, and in our attempt to really stop this matter, we don't get successful prosecution of people that have been arrested and so forth. And we're experiencing two levels of losses. One is people that are bypassing meters, legally connected by bypass meters. In other words, instead of consuming 5, you consume 20, and it goes on. That's why we have this intermittent intervals of outages. The second part is illegal connections, where you have one household in a yard with 5 bedrooms, all tapping into the same system, which was not designed for that. And there's policy issues because the regulations from municipalities don't allow us to have multiple points. In other words, we cannot connect those and regard them as customers, the backyard rooms as customers. So the whole urbanization issue requires attention from policymakers in terms of how we deal with unproclaimed areas also, which are the ones that we referred to earlier and all that. And we have the technology to respond to most of these issues that are raised. Smart metering is one of them. The Nkomazi area, I think, Chair, we will have a roadshow again. We will have to go back to those hotspots and identify what are the critical issues. These are some of the areas where you have uncontrolled migration of movement of people. And this is the border in Nkomazi, it's bordering Swaziland and Mozambique and Mpumalanga area. And there, with the municipalities that we are working with, they are also having major challenges. As a matter of fact, in Mpumalanga, we have what we call a provincial principal committee run by the Premier as well as the Honorable MEC Mukwena of Economic Development, whereby ESCOM at the power stations, the power stations that we are building there, as well as transmission and distribution and government, are working together to look at employment. Most of the issues that were raised today actually were discussed at our last meeting, which was 2 weeks back, in terms of how do we move forward. And I think we are making progress in terms of moving forward. I will pause here, Chair. If I left anything else, we can be reminded. Isaac, is there anything else you want to comment on electrification in brief?
I think before Isaac, I see a hand.
I think that Isaac will come in. Just, I think we need to apologize from the shareholders' point of view, as the public enterprise is that the Department of Energy is supposed to have come here. Some of the questions are really policy issues, which you need to give that directives to say what is that which you want to be done in terms of expediting verification issues in fields aspects, because in the area where ESCOM is responsible, there is a policy in place. But in the area where municipalities are the one responsible, and with the DOE, you find that there is a gap, and therefore we need to say how do we closer to move forward, and that's an issue which we want to raise. The second part, Madam Chair, is that I get the question which talks to say, what is ESCOM doing to respond to the SONA? It was the State of the Nation addressed by the President. And I think that the response which was put in the presentation was to respond to that. However, we might not have been at the level which, as has been raised, that you should have arrived to the level wherein we got to understand that speak the language is not technical. Speak to us how we can then be able to become the change agents to go and speak to communities to understand what are the issues happening. Lastly, one needs to just add on the illegal connection or losses or theft of electricity. In the sitting of cabinet recently, the cabinet resolved the criminal justice class to look at that matter. That we need to be able, because we say that we are concerned that a lot of electricity just disappeared, and we need to be able to hold people accountable. And therefore, we're given a mandate that, no, go sit down, economic development, Ministry of Justice, and Minister of Public Enterprise, look into measures which you can put in place together with Minister of Police to ensure that we escalate the level of this to become a criminal offense, that we then be able to be accountable on their acts in relation to illegal connections. And I think that that's an issue which it's a communication aspect which I think that we need to be able to escalate at some stage to ensure that we're able to give you the specifics of what is that which we're looking at in terms of how we want to address this thing. And as to issues of the new growth path plan, I think that ESCOM, they will talk to it. There is a response which we were given as a mandate, saying, look, tell us what is all your SOEs. If you're public enterprise, you've got ESCOM, Transnet, SAA, and everyone, even South Coal in Mpumalanga, to what extent are you contributing to the new growth path? Job creation, skills, all of that. The issues raised around the artisan aspect, which is a concern. I mean, we have went further to even try to say, this is how we want to do it and how much it will cost, which goes back to the same question of funding. And therefore, we said, no, fine. Let's put measures in place to ensure that we're able to supply the required requisite skills and we move forward as such. I think that others, I think, will be able to respond to that. But like I said, the intention was that we need to apologize for DOE, but equally to apologize for the same apology was sent by the chief executive of ESCOM and the financial director, who are not here. Because among the issues they are doing is about the shareholders' compact we must do in terms of looking forward.
Pardon? Are you their spokesperson?
I'm their shareholder.
You are the shareholder.
Yeah, whatever they do, I must approve it. If I don't approve it,
sorry, Bob. Sorry, Mr. Mucheta. Because I think we should have heard that from ESCOM, though you are the shareholder. But at the moment, the way you are speaking, it's like you are closing. So don't close now. We are still on. We are still on. I'm appealing to you not to close. Because your responses now, it's like you're saying, don't do that. Okay. Can we hear from Andrew? Honorable Mabija, sorry, from Isaac. Before that, Honorable Mabija, you had your hand up.
I wanted to say something in conjunction with what the previous speaker has been saying. I don't know if you are permitting me to do that. You see, we should... I heard him talking about communicating with the police so that they should take action wherever to assist. But I have observed that ourselves who are semi have who have the have, whether we are on the political or administration component, we run to, our mentality is set for punishment. We are negative about the wrongdoers, and we neglect to get the root cause of them doing that wrong. Because if you can check, we have a problem of illegal connections. We have a problem of bridging. That's why some electricity is just disappearing. You don't know where the electricity has gone to. And why are these people doing this? It's because they are not employed. It's lack of knowledge. Some are already beyond repair. They are thieves. They are beyond repair. And there comes a thing of synergy. Where synergy with municipalities? Because in municipalities, there's this thing called indigent forms. And if municipality are doing their work properly,
there wouldn't be these illegal connections and bridging. And instead of you running to municipality to discuss this issue, maybe together partnershiping with them to make a way forward on how to reinforce completion by indigents of those forms, you run to police to lock them in. They strike. So there are a lot of things. Why do we have a punishing mentality to the wrongdoers?
Okay.
You know, this is very painful. All of us here, when we need bread, we can buy. When electricity is gone, we go and buy. And those who cannot buy prepaid electricity, they remain with those electricity from Eskom, and you are ripping them. Your prices are very high. That is true. And this creates a problem with those who are not working, those who cannot.
Stop you there.
Okay, thank
you. So that we get the responses. Maybe the responses need to be said now. Maybe we're going to hear how to. How to. Yes. Can you, like Mr. Mutesa, you'll come in at last. Yeah, yes. I see you were willing to talk because you wanted to. So don't do that now. Mr. Isaac Sekopa.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the honorable members. I think Louis has addressed most of the aspects, but I'll just touch on some of the issues. I wanted to talk about one. Louis spoke about it, but I think he just gloated over it to say, in terms of the white paper, we no longer fund electrification as Eskom. The funding for electrification since 2001 April comes from the fiscus through the line budget of the Department of Energy. And then this is a conditional grant, which ours is called a Schedule 7 grant. And it becomes part of the medium-term expenditure framework. So what I'm trying to say here, Chair, is that we can only be in a position to electrify the households as per that particular budget. How we go around in respect of the process is as follows. The municipalities have got their own priorities in terms of IDPs. We engage with municipalities to say to them, look, which projects do you prioritize for this particular year? And they give us a list. And once the budget is approved, and this gets approved by the National Electrification Advisory Committee, and once the budget gets approved, then we finalize the list with municipalities as to say which project then will be prioritized for the following year. And once that gets completed, then the list gets gazetted. So for all the projects that we do in any particular year, then if you go into the website, the gazette is there, you will be able then now to see those projects. The 100,000, what I'm saying is that once together with the municipalities we've agreed on a list of projects that are to be implemented on that particular year, then the list gets given to the Department of Energy, and this gets put in the gazette. And this happens around February, to be exact. And then that list is published in the gazette, as well as the amounts in respect of each municipality. From our side, then with the municipalities, we get what we call IDP letters, where then now they say to us, we have approved the following projects for Eskom to implement in this particular year, given this amount of budget that they have. And armed with that, then we enter into a contract
with the Department of Energy as implementing agents for those number of households that you are going to electrify in that particular year. And then once the contract is signed, the money is transferred and we continue with the project. We are not allowed to deviate from that project. If, for instance, then now we deviate from the program for that year, there's got to be consensus between ourselves, the Department of Energy, the relevant municipality, for the projects, the new projects to be regazetted. So it's not something that we can unilaterally do as ESCOM. Then the funding that we receive, it's not adequate to be able to go that far as connections are concerned, mainly because most of the funding that we receive is used to build substations. There is a big need of substations in Limpopo, in KZN, and in the Eastern Cape. Mpumalanga, for instance, we are only doing one substation this year in Komazi, because Mpumalanga, it's very easy to do. If we can get the funding, for instance, up front, and somebody says, do universal access in Mpumalanga, that should be funding over and above the allocation on the MTF. Chair, we should be able to reach universal access there by 2014. That is the same story in Northern Cape. That is the same story in Northwest Province. And what I'm saying here, I'm referring, Chair, to ESCOM's areas of supply. Because here we need to understand that electricity is regulated business. There are 283 municipalities in this country, and only 178 are licensed to distribute electricity. Out of that 178, only 106 have got the ability to do the work. Those that still do have licenses will still do work there. Most of the municipalities in the former TBVC states and self-governing territories, those are the ones that now we took over since 1995. And then now we then distribute directly to the customers in those municipalities. So the point I'm trying to make is that from our side, Chair, it's not that we can take unilateral decisions on issues affecting electrification. We've got to consult SALGA, we've got to consult AMEU, we've got to consult the DOE. We all sit in the NEAC on these issues. But all of us, we agree on one aspect, and that is funding is the issue. Otherwise, we should be able then now to rise to the challenge. For instance, given the current medium-term expenditure framework, then if one would assume that then now there will be no growth, that is, there will be no houses built, then we address the current backlog. We should be able then now to do that in 2032-33, which obviously is not acceptable to communities out there. So the point is that we seriously need funding. With the current funding, the number of connections that we are able to dispense on any particular year is on an average of 100,000 connections, which are generally not enough to meet the expectation that you find out there. There was a question, Chair, around schools and clinics. Schools and clinics, up to 2010, the Department of Energy had a budget of around 80 million per annum on schools and clinics. But since 2007, they had a separate program to phase out clinics. Then they were going then now to electrify whatever is electrifiable, which was 3 kilometers away from grid, and then now the rest be energized using other means of energy. It was the same thing with schools. Last year, we had the last chunk of funding from DOE, which then now where we had only to electrify schools which are 3 kilometers from grid. We are currently finalizing an agreement with the Department of Basic Education. They have given us a list of schools that they need electrified, and they've got a budget of $66 million. And and we hope next week we're having a meeting with them to finalize that arrangement, and then we can start electrifying schools. Chair, that's still not going to take us far in terms of those schools, because there's still about 6,000 to 7,000 schools that are electrified in the country. So it still boils down to what we were saying then, now is the issue of funding. The other issue, Chair, about substations. Substations in Limpopo, in KZN, I've got a list here of all the substations that were built in this year, Chair, to try and meet the demand. And I think Honorable Member Mlenza and I was actually addressing the top portion of the Eastern Cape that sits there now between Dina and Umzumkulu. I have got there about 7 substations that we are building now. Some of them are going to be ready this year, and some are going to be ready next year. And those are going to alleviate the issue of capacity. One needs to accept, Chair, the real fact here is that, for instance, if you talk about that area, Mount Fletcher was the last town to be to be provided with grid electricity in South Africa, and that was in December 2000. When we inherited Tesco in 1995, 5 towns in the former Transkei were not electrified. We had to connect to those towns. For instance, now that area, that is the Tina Umzumkulu area, then now we are beginning now to reap the fruits, and fortunately, we are working with the mayors in that area. In fact, mayor, the executive mayor Mpumza, is leading the delegation, and we make sure that we give him feedback. We meet with them regularly to update on what is being done there. And at the moment, I can sleep at night and sleep comfortably and say everything is on course, because then now we've spoken to the mayors and they are communicating with the communities so that they can assure them that then now things will happen. Connection is never a problem. If you've got backbone, you've got bulk infrastructure, Chair, then now connection, we keep on saying, is 15% of what you see in the value chain at the end of it all. What we are doing now is the 85%. And if you go in KZN, in fact, what excites me, the two areas, Musinga and Wedwe, because those in the past years, they have been a bone of contention. We've got substations. In fact, Musinga, we are rolling that out this year. And then now that should commence with then now the electrification and connections of the households within the Musinga area. The same story in Limpopo around Sekukune, for instance. We've got a list. Is that I've got a list of all these areas. But our list, Chair, will not actually answer what you wanted 100%, in the sense is that it's difficult at this stage to commit and say, in this particular year, this is what we are doing, because it depends on the availability of funding. We do have a list of district councils that where we can say to you, this is where the backlog sits, we know, and this is the number of households. We can give you various scenarios around that to say that now, in 10 years' time, if funding is made available, this is then now how we can connect those villages. So generally, we do have a plan or an action plan, but the big constraint is the constraint of funding. I don't want to blame the Department of Energy here. I've been part of their delegation, Chair, to Treasury. We have made several presentations with them to Treasury on this aspect, because we are saying to them, do us a favor, in terms of the bulk infrastructure, give us money up front, and then now we can roll out the required bulk infrastructure, and then the connections will be a thing of the past. But I think everyone knows Treasury takes their time to listen. Chair, I think from where I'm sitting, I'm just looking here, the issue of infills. The infills, we've got a clear policy on infills. Yes, I agree. When the DOE took over the program in 2001 until 2005, there was no clear policy on infills as to who would do the infills. The reality at that particular point in time being that then now if you fund infills, that is, you use DOE funding to fund infills in an area previously identified by ESCOM, actually that asset to whom does it belong? But we clarified that at the end. And as a result, as ESCOM in 2005, we made available an amount of about 150 million to do infills. And we negotiated then now a policy shift with the department. And in respect then of the funding that we receive annually, 10% of that funding goes to infills. For instance, one of the problems that was there was the issue of pre-engineering, because we ended doing pre-engineering on the year of implementation. We have resolved that as well. They have made money on an annual basis for us to be able now to pre-engineer the projects of the following year, so that then now we don't have a lot of delays. Let me just check, Chair, if I have the synergy between ESCOM and municipalities. We are working very well with municipalities, because whichever way you go, the municipalities are wall to wall, and whether it's an ESCOM area of supply or a municipal area of supply, the ESCOM area of supply will be in a municipality. So we've got to talk to municipalities. The problem, I think it was raised previously when we were in Parliament, the problem about building houses and then not connecting them is twofold. One, we engage with the municipality and they say to us, we are going to build RTP houses in year A. And then now we keep a budget for that. The houses don't come to fruition. And then now you take that money and have to find some houses somewhere else, because with Treasury, you must spend that money in that particular year. You cannot roll it over. And then what happens is that by the time the houses come up, the funding is no longer there. One other problem, which then now we're busy addressing, the Department of Energy in their policy, they've got what is called an 80% rule, which then now means that you can only go in and put a retic infrastructure in those areas once the houses are 80% occupied. And this has had unintended consequences. I can give you an example in Jamestown, where we had electrified an area. Then the municipality decided to move them to RTP houses. Because there was no electricity there, once people get allocated the house, they go there, they take the door, they take out the windows, because they say, we can't leave electricity and come to a place that's not electrified. But we resolved that, because immediately that we were made aware of that. We immediately then now negotiated with the department, and I think we used teaching funding, but we resolved that particular problem. So that's the problems of the trade chain. Yeah. I guess more or less all the issues, Chair, that were raised, we have covered them.
I think that in order to do most of the questions, we go to the bill quickly, so that we at least be able to answer 80% of the questions. Chris.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm just going to cover a basket of questions, and the first one is around the issue of skills development, the use of artisans and welders. I think, Chair, firstly, let me create the landscape. The landscape is that there's a significant demand on these skills, not only in South Africa, but internationally. Within ESCOM, there's a demand for the skills, not only on new build, but existing work that's ongoing on power stations. Because we do a lot of outages that require a significant amount of work, including welding. The other statement that I want to make, Chair, is the welding associated, in particular for Modupi and Kusile, it's very specific welding techniques required for very exotic materials. And for us to ensure that we have quality of plant that lasts for the 50 years of design, we need to make sure we have properly coated welders to do that. So ESCOM is painfully aware
of the skills shortage in the country. Now, that doesn't mean to say we need to sit back and watch everything fall into place. We need to act. And how have we acted? We have now established an Eskom Academy of Learning. And I think my colleague in the HR can talk a little bit more about that. But just to say, more especially on the welding side, we're looking at setting up a school of welding where we can train people for the industry, not only for the use of Eskom, for Eskom, but for industry. And I think the second thing that we need to do, which was said earlier in the presentation, is that we need to be diligent with our contractors coming from external sources, where they really make sure they tap the local market as far as possible and make sure that they themselves are involved in the skills transfer. So I just wanted to just make that overall statement on the skills. With reference, Chair, to what Eskom has done in the communities where we're building coal-fired stations or big infrastructure, I think we tried to cover some of that in the presentation. And if we look at slide 26, where we talk about the local infrastructure, particularly associated with Medupi, you can see that it expands the length and breadth from setting up or from initiating the setup of shops to hotels to looking at sanitation, where we've assisted the town to upgrade sewage systems, because obviously the town was not catered for or did not cater for the additional volumes of water usage, sewage, road, and the conditions of road and railway. Is he locked up? Okay, but it's on slide 26 here. When he comes back, we can put it up. So we're doing a lot. The one aspect that we need to revert back to you is on the houses, where we build the houses. So that we will definitely do, and when will they be completed? That we'll definitely do. I also wanted to make mention, Chair, in answering your questions on job creation, we have slide 25, which is unfortunately it's not up, but the previous slide, where we talk about direct on-site jobs that are created as a result of the projects, and also then indirect jobs that actually are required to support the project external to the project itself. We've not covered the gender issue, and we will do that, Chair. That's noted. Chair, the last issue that I would want to cover is the issue of nuclear. I think it's important for us to note that nuclear offers definitely an alternative baseload option for coal in this country. We have to recognize that. Nuclear is very complex, very capital intensive, but in the long run proves to be a plant that is competing very favorably from an operating perspective. And we can see that in the history of Cuba. So the comments are noted. However, we are working with our shareholder and the Department of Energy to find out exactly what Eskom's role is going to be in nuclear. We're close to coming to a resolution. We have to be close because, like I said, the urgency is still there in terms of making sure that we have enough time to plan power stations before we start putting concrete in the ground. It takes 5 to 7 years to develop a power plant before you can start pouring concrete, and with nuclear, especially around the interactions with the nuclear regulator, it's around 8 years. So we are aware of that, and we are working closely with government to see how we can expedite that. To jumpstart the process, we've been doing some site development work, which is very neutral. Anybody, if government decided that it's another entity building nuclear over and above Eskom, that site can be used. But site development is important because it jumpstarts the process of development. So, Chair, that's my comments from the new build side. Thank you.
Chair, with regards to the importation... Excuse
me, Mike.
We're good to go, sir. Thank you, Lady Chair, Madam Chair. With regards to the importation and exports of power,
In South Africa, we import and export roughly about the same amount of power. So we export about 5% of our electricity and import about 5% of our electricity. So they balance each other off. In numbers, that's about 1,200 gigawatt hours of electricity per month. Our biggest trading partner is Mozambique, and there we export to the smelter, the smelter Mozal, the Mozal aluminium smelter, and we import power, as the member correctly pointed out, from Cahora Bassa. We import about 1,500 megawatts from Cahora Bassa, and we export about 1,000 megawatts to the aluminium smelter in Mozal. We do export a small amount of additional power to Botswana, to Swaziland, to Lesotho, and to Namibia, but they're very, very small in comparison to the exports and imports which we have with Mozambique. When we do have surplus power, we export additional amounts to Zimbabwe and to Zambia, but once again, these are very small, and only when we have surplus capacity available. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I think one most important issue that I would like to do is, especially which was asked by a member from, and yourself, Madam Chair, it's about the information that we're providing today. What we would do is provide you with those answers that we don't have in our presentation, but we will try to go beyond that in a month's time to actually work it down in terms of provinces, so that we recognize that unlike members of the portfolio committee in the National Assembly who recognize that, that your members would like to know what are the power stations in my areas, what is training in my areas, what are the issues, what is ESCOM in Mpumalanga, what is ESCOM, and we will work on that with my team and ensure that we probably be able to give you something like a passport that you can always carry with you and be able to refer to all the information, where are the customer offices in my particular area, and to try to align them with provinces, because most of the information that we do have with us is according to the regions that we do have. We promise we'll be able to do that. Probably when we come back also to do our annual report, we'll have, when we come to the National Council of Provinces, it will not be a similar presentation that we would give in the portfolio committee. It will be down granular and goes much more deeper to talk to the issues in your areas and your constituencies.
I think that it should have been like that, actually, because if you come to the National Council of Provinces, you should understand that you're coming to representatives from provinces. Like now, we will be going to our constituencies. That information is needed by yesterday, not after a month. But we are going, the urgent one that you can do.
Do
it so that next week when we go, we've got that information on hand. Otherwise, if you are in a constituency, no people are coming to the office looking for information or saying we don't have electricity, and you don't have that information, that you are really not representing them.
No, we'll do so.
Okay.
Within the next 48 hours, Carlin will provide you most of the information, and then we'll like to make also, going forward, a booklet for you of all these issues.
Okay.
Honorable Mabitsa, Honorable Nyanjana, Honorable
Bande, in that order. Remember, we still have the minutes to do.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm just worried. To say we have called ESCOM to come and make these presentations, but when we need some of the answers, seemingly ESCOM has some tentacles. It's an octopus. It has some tentacles, and some of those tentacles are not here. It's for the first time that I hear the shareholder. The shareholder has to respond to that. The gentleman on the other side said they are no longer dealing with electrification. Electrification is taken over by another company. So that's why I'm saying they are having tentacles. But what we need are the answers from ESCOM, whether they have tentacles or not tentacles. But what? Because if we do not dig deep with these questions, wouldn't we have got these answers and know that there are other subsidiaries that are connected to ESCOM. But also, I want to raise these issues of policies, acts, and so on. Where they're having problems, they've got the right to ask us, as a select committee of labor and public enterprise, to intervene on their behalf. Because if they want to have a policy, a certain policy, we have a select committee that can deal with that. For instance, with the issue of Department of Energy, I was not aware that electrification, Department of Energy has to give a budget for that. So it's for the first time that we hear that. So, and if it's like that, we can raise that with the select committee which deals with energy. What kind of a pressure they can say that funding should be added to the Department of Energy in order to address this. Because I'm also worried about this issue of substations. Because the money that they receive from the Department of Energy goes to building of substations. What happens after that? Who takes care of connections? You cannot just build substations, because those substations should be connected with houses. So maybe also we need to have that balance between the money that goes to substations and also to electrifications. But the other issue that they have not responded to, the sound labor relations between employer and employee, that has not been responded to. So if we could get, and also the issue of skills. You know, it's a high tech, they say the issue of welding is high tech. But let's say that thing, it takes 3 years to do it, welding for 3 years. Don't you think if you have taken somebody who's new, and he learns that, don't you think after 3 years you would not have acquired those skills? That's what I'm raising. You cannot say, no, it's a high tech, it needs people who have those kind of skills. But it goes on for 3 to 5 years. But at the end of that, we don't have somebody who can do that kind of a job. So I think if we are serious, we need that person that we have imported. He must leave the skills here. And when he's gone, we must be able to use those skills.
Thank you, Chairperson. As a whip of this select committee, my understanding and belief is that in the beginning was darkness, and God, the supernatural power, decided to separate darkness and created light, so that he can proceed with his framework accordingly. And this shows that light is ESCOM, and it is of a vital importance to human beings God created. Therefore, my wish will be that we never meet again here in Parliament. We will meet on site, whether you are giving us a report or a strategic plan or an annual budget report, whatever, on site, we meet and do that. From there, we go to a place where we will have an oversight, all of us, so that you prove the point correct and right, so that ESCOM is delivering a most important function. So that's my wish. I do not wish to see us seated here with our ties on. I want us to go out and put on boots to climb at Medupi, etc. That's my wish. I just wanted to make it clear.
You must just provide them with the sizes of the boots.
Thanks, Chairperson. I am also almost covered. I will not harp on what has been raised to assist time, but safe to say that on what Honorable Mabija said, I just want to add for consideration by both ESCOM and the committee that, look, when one has been listening, you pick up that there is a need. We have been talking synergy here throughout. I think it is our joint responsibility
to see to it that there is the synergy. Sitting here, you have got new mayors, you have got new municipalities, you have got, you know, new people. I think we have to craft a way wherein there is not necessarily implementation by such a person, but what is important is information sharing. It's very, very important. It has to be crafted somehow. Maybe outside here, the management committee together with ESCOM can see how best to deal with that. And lastly, Chairperson, I want to appeal to ESCOM. It's that comment which I wanted to raise. One would like to see a dedicated program on rural development, Chairperson. Maybe ESCOM should understand that when you are dealing with this committee, we are 99.9% rural in this select committee. And I think that is fortunate for our community. We are more interested. Now, we are happy that we haven't mentioned Western Cape. Let me say it without fear or favor. Otherwise, we would chow you if you would come here telling us that you have put lots and lots of money in Cape Town, which is so developed, when we have got a Lukangeni deep there in the Eastern Cape, which has got nothing. Hence, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mabija and Honorable, the Chief of the Committee. Yes, and you know, I've been so pleased.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe I've missed the point on two things which was not responded to quietly so or minimally so. You see, Chairperson, I think in terms of the Constitution and also in terms of the PFMA, when I ask about risk management, I mean it. Because that question was categorized into two, that we wanted to find out whether ESCOM does have risk management and also who constitutes it. Because it's very broad to say we do have a structure, so no, that doesn't talk at all. Then secondly, I've requested the ESCOM to maybe to elaborate further about the issue of in terms of upgradings. I even illustrated and given an example that about the legacy whereby in some of the areas they were putting small transformers. Now the society is developing and they need the upgrading of transformers. Where do they have that programs? Because for an example, few days ago in TV you saw demonstration, people are crying with electricity. And as part of it in my area, where I'm coming from, in Bethel, in Mpumalanga, each and every year, there are crises of electricity. In that regard, with that the society have developed and the township is now big, the volumes are, I mean, the intake is very big. If they can clarify, where do they have that programs? Because it was clear the, with the backgrounds, with the program, which they gave us about 100,000 of connections, that is correct, but there was silence about the issue of upgradings.
The big part, Chair, sorry, that we have not yet covered, that was done by Mr. Bulunga. Maybe that's why there are some follow-up questions. Maybe we should ask Mr. Bulunga to cover the Kusile and Midupi strike and the relationship between labor and the Labor Department, and then we can answer the question that we are allowed to answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we take the point that sound labor relations is the most sustainable sort of approach that we should all be thriving for. But I must say that the issue with us is not the strike or industrial action. I think the issue for us would be violence, that it's unwelcome in the relationship but at any point, I think between labor and employers, there will be differences, and strike is a legally protected method of the bargaining sort of process, and therefore it will be violence that we are definitely have to work and ensure that it doesn't happen, and also that it is a criminal offense to be violent and damaging property. Madam Chair, in terms of what costs resulted from this, it's something that the project people may come through as a result. I wouldn't be having the answers that the members asked. The issue of skills, we are very aggressive in addressing skills within ESCOM. We have, for instance, year-on-year 4,500 learnership pipeline, and we produce not less than 800 technically trained people every year, and we always, at any point, have 4,400 people. This year, in response to SONA, we are looking at the youth development program. As the shareholder department confirmed, is that the funding is still to be negotiated. We are going to take about 5,000 extra training, so we are very aggressive on the skills development, not only for our own consumption, but for the country as well. Madam Chair, I'll just comment back on the welders. I think we should not run the danger of simplifying the complication and the sophistication that is needed. It's almost, for welding, it's almost like a heart surgeon. Somebody has just qualified this year. You wouldn't trust him to do your loved one doing a heart surgery. You would look for somebody that had done it 3, 4, 5 times, because these boilers and...
So you intimidate him.
Also, at the back there, I saw you. You say, tell them. Tell them. You know.
Madam Chair, it is not to minimize the drive we are making to ensure that we have got the skills developed locally. But it's necessary that as lawmakers you are aware of the complication. We can't just say to you, give you the answer that will make you feel good. In reality, it means that people must have had the experience so that they will do a long-lasting job. Some of these, in fact, all of the power stations are being built for the next 50 years. And therefore, we have one chance to get it right. It's when we're doing it. Because the next time we have to get it right, there will be a chaos. So we're taking risks. We are training people. We have taken 50 welders this year, and we are going to be taking them as and when they qualify. And also we're ensuring that we're upping the standards in South Africa in the Welding Institute so that the standards that are required are embedded within the certification that is done within the country. So we're not sort of sitting back and just going outside to get the skills. I think on the risk management, the risk...
The training centers, whilst we are still there, the training centers that have been built out of these provinces.
Chair, at Lephalale, there is a center that we support, and all the contractors are supporting that training center. And I think if need be, in the areas like Mpumalanga, we don't have that is sort of centered on the project. However, all those are driven by the need to provide those. And I think a point is taken that we should be providing the facilities closer to where we have the project. And in fact, we do have a very big relationship with the provincial government and the mayors around which we are building Gusile, we are building Metupi. There is huge cooperation between ESCOM and the surrounding communities and authorities, and also the issues are being raised for both recruitment as well as the training, and where necessary the training needs to be brought closer. On the
Chair, the gentleman has said, I'm forgetting. No, he was talking that they're having an intake about 4,000 and they're producing 800. I think we'll need that breakdown. And from which provinces? And the other issue is that these people must be professionals who has to do this kind of a job. But how do you give a person a chance if you don't give him the chance to have those skills? You say the person does not have experience, but you don't give him that experience. So I think it's important what we are saying. Why does this person have the skills? Why don't you get somebody to have the same skills? We are not entrusting with the responsibility to do the job. But what we are saying, he must acquire that skill. You move from the unknown to the known. Thanks.
Breakdown. We will need the breakdown and also the criteria that you are using to select from these provinces. Thank you. Can you respond to other questions?
Point taken, would provide that. The risk was risk management. Within ESCOM, we do, in fact, within EXCO, there is an executive responsible for risk and strategy. And it cascades to each and every operation within ESCOM. I think the issue was asked in relation to the labor unrest that we had and therefore the damage that was done. Whether we did take a sort of manage through the risk, we did, and there will always be sort of unexpected behavior from people and the damage and the response from the enforcement, law enforcement was also delayed because we could have every contingency plan. We didn't have our own police armed on site, which would have maybe prevented the employees from damaging the property and equipment. We rely on the South African police response whenever this happens. But we do have risk management, the requirement for all our operation, including construction.
Just to add that even our board, honourable member, there's a board committee on risk management that is constituted by non-executive directors as a committee of the board of ESCOM. I think the other thing that probably was emphasized by our shareholder, which is quite important, on skills development, they insisted that we should be very aggressive, and very early in the year, they called all state-owned enterprises, and they wanted us to provide what is it that we are doing, and dictated to us what additional we should do, and the word they used was be as aggressive as we possibly can.
Chair, to respond on the electrification issues, the substations, the issue around upgrades, yes, we do have a robust program. Year in, year out, we are investing money. As the areas grow, we have management processes that measures the load increases over a period of time, and we have what we call refurbishment and strengthening programs for all the provinces in the country. And we do that. If there are specifics that we need to attend to, I would gladly like to have those and see where we are. We might most likely have programs happening in the Bethel area. In the other areas where we have challenges, not at the upstream in terms of substations, but low voltage, which are now going to the households, we are upgrading the transformers that are supplying those households. Specifically in Mpumalanga, we have set money aside from last year to upgrade all the mini-subs that are supporting those customers that are having perpetual power failures during peak because of overloading. And also we need to mention that illegal connection is still an issue. And I think there was a question around what are the social aspects around it. I think the bulk of it, it's more need for electrification. And that need can be met by the availability of funding to address those issues. And I think the last time when we had the select committee of DOE and economic development, we did with SALGA express a need to have a process that will deal with the funding in general to be able to deal with universal access, the unproclaimed areas, and as well as elimination of illegal connections. But that only, I mean, that on its own is not going to achieve all the desired needs, because some of it is behavior, as I said. It's not about, it's about getting more with less. And this is where people are bridging the meters. And we need to have some form of, and I think that's where the shareholder says they have met with the institutions in the country to deal with this matter. We really need policy shift on criminalization of electricity theft, because it is a problem. Whilst we are dealing with all other social aspects, like the multi-point connections to accelerate electrification, we are working with the municipalities in terms of free basic electricity. We are providing FBE to households, and we have all the indigenous lists from the municipalities, and we are guided by them. As they increase, we increase. As they decrease, we decrease. But the provision is made available. The synergies around information sharing, our plan, every year or after elections, we have a robust stakeholder management process where we go out and meet municipalities at the council chambers, where we actually orientate and induct them of our activities in their specific district municipalities. So we do have per province, per municipality and district municipality a program to induct the new councillors as well as the mayors. And we are going to do this the same with this one also. We will probably give you the program when we package all these other things that we want to share with you. I welcome the issue of being on site. Let me point out again and remind our honorable members that we, to date, we have electrified 4 million households. I think this is a milestone. And we shouldn't really underestimate the amount of work and energy that went through this process, from really 30-something percent to 80-something percent availability of electricity into ESCOM areas. It's a milestone. Yes, there's more to be done. Particularly in the rural areas, we will have to work with all the institutions, the municipalities or the chiefs in those areas and different government entities to deal with this matter. The upgrading of substation is definitely resounding to the Councillor Honourable, Honourable Sibanda, a member here, that we do have a program. And if Bethel is a problem, I would like to really have a look at it specifically and check what have we been doing the last few years and what are the issues there. But in general, nationally, we have a footprint of strengthening as well as refurbishment of our networks. I think I've covered all the issues, Chair.
Thank you very much. The week has spoken. We will send a program. We'll tell you where we'll be, when we will be where. Like I was saying, the honourable member will supply you with the sizes of the boots, because you know for and the what is it, helmet, hard head, yeah, the makarap, yeah, we will and the overalls. So the sizes are coming. Definitely, this is an activist parliament. We will come there. We will see for ourselves. And when we sit down, when we talk to you, you'll understand why we are so aggressive on all these issues. And we will understand also why this has been done, why this has not been done. Now, the shareholder, you can wrap up.
Thanks. I think you already done that, and thanks to colleagues from ESCOM. I think they've responded. that they are, you are supplied with those issues which you need to come back to you. And some of the issues which might be that are said in the initial that we apologize, that some of when we read the letter, we thought that now we have covered the areas. And we have realized that we should have gone to the level where we must be. And that's an accusation we always receive everywhere, that speak to us as if we don't know your industry, so that we can then be able to become your mouthpiece. In that statement, we say that a lot needs to be done. You can't do it if you are speaking the language of the Queen's Saloon and our peoples in Venda, our peoples in Eastern Cape, all rural areas, yeah, are not able to get to that. We will, like we said, we will continue, Madam Chair, to also monitor how we deal with our import-export issues, as the Honourable Member has raised. We know that some of the engagement which ESCOM is doing in the region are not of ESCOM's making. It's because there are memorandum of understanding between the states. For example, ourselves, Mozambique. This week, the President was in DRC, and there's a role ESCOM has played in DRC. Therefore, you have got a certain way in ESCOM has responded to the political will of our development of our region, which sometimes you'll find that there is, it looks like there's a focus on the region, not inwards. Well, we'll do that role in the region while we're maintaining, ensuring that in the country, the fire keeps burning and that light should continue to be there as such. I think we'll also want to, there's a question that was raised on our nuclear. Of course, we responded the way we wanted to. But the issue is that politically, Cabinet decided in 2005 that the new capacity going forward will be split between ESCOM and the private sector on the 70-30 split. Now, we'll have to sit down and say, whether ESCOM, what role must you play in the nuclear, in the renewable energy space? What is the price impact which goes to whether ability of people to afford the electricity which will produce from that aspect? Whether we must continue on our coal, dirty as it is, if we try to clean it better and find the price is still okay, we can continue with it as opposed to go to a very expensive technology. And that's what we're saying, that we'll monitor that, but we'll keep on giving those briefings when necessary. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Let me thank ESCOM for the presentation and for the responses, and to say we will see you on site. And there are matriculated young women and young men who are out there in provinces. If ESCOM can look at how to coordinate them, those who have maths and science. You know, it's a request that I am making today to you as ESCOM, to say, in all these provinces, there are girls and boys who have matriculated, who have science and maths, who couldn't go to universities. So if you can sit down as ESCOM and look at what can you do for these young people, because when we are in constituencies, they really do come to us. They do come to us, but now there is no coordination. If you can just have a program of coordinating them, maybe you don't have to respond now to say, yes, we will do it, but I'm putting it to you as ESCOM to say, do something for these people. Thank you very much. We will see you
on site.
Huh?
Yeah, on site. Yeah,
okay,
we see each other on site.
Okay.
I want to see other faces.
Let me, I must remind you that this is select committee. You know, there is a difference, actually, when you come to Parliament, or maybe sometimes even when you are outside Parliament, know that there are select committees and there are portfolio committees, and there are two houses of Parliament. This one is the select committee. It should be a slogan, you know? It should be a slogan that it rings. So that when you come here, shareholder, when you know that you, whether it's select committee on energy or on labor and public enterprises, your presentation, some other departments do forget. They just remove that. Sometimes they even forget that it's a select committee. They come with the same presentation from the portfolio committee, and then while we are seated here, you see portfolio committee, and then we say no. But we must all remember that an informed leader is an effective leader. Thank you very much. Dr. Chair, over to you.
Chair, thank you very much on behalf of our delegation and on behalf of our company. We would want to thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present to you. We have a number of questions that we need to answer. Well, Kagan is here. Before you go on recess, we'll be able to respond. Just to emphasize that indeed we have a very close working relationship with our shareholders and all other departments and our colleagues and our municipalities. We will definitely be as aggressive as we possibly can with skills development, and we'll ensure that everything is done properly, and we will ensure that a presentation to the select committee is a presentation to the select committee and not the portfolio committee.
Members, we've got minutes now in front of us. All step from going out, because I see the time is really against us. We have plenary. Mr. Isaac, if you can talk a little bit softer. Yeah, at the minute. On page one, honourable members, we've got minutes in front of us. I take it, honourable members, we have read the minutes. But on page one, Phumelele, I'm not an MP. I am M. M. Omalizane. Honourable members, on page one, any correction? Your card? Okay. Oh, page four? Page five? Page six? Page 7, page 8, page 9, page, okay. Your mic
up. Chairperson, I've tried to peruse through. My concern is one. Official, I think it's a mistake. I don't know whether it's deliberately so. I think we agreed some time ago that minutes mustn't be reduced to an individual. I'll put an example where in number page six, from page six, I think Dr. Weso is from the DOC, but most of the references here from most of the pages from page six up there to the last, they single out Dr. Weso. Dr. Weso said 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. While in others, like I'll put an example, on paragraph 2, under D, action item 3. In response to the question, Dr. Weso told the committee that the DOC, instead of maybe indicating that the DOC 1123123, that is worrying me. Because you can check, it goes on and on. And again, if you go from page 7 again, upwards, it's wise maybe to indicate one, that who is, so that people who get this minutes will understand that who is Mr. Vilakazi. But it goes on and on. Mr. Vilakazi said this, the DOC is like this. To me, don't go well. And I don't know. I'll come on again in some pages, page 12, to indicate something as well. There are these things worrying me because it goes a lot. It's about 1%, 1% names of people instead of the department.
Honorable Mlenzan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I noted, Mr. Chairperson, also, but I thought, because I also wanted to remark before I sent my feedback, but I said maybe perhaps for the department or any other entity which visits us, for purposes of pinning down that particular entity or department, they may say, who said that? Because the police of the department doesn't say 1, 2, 3. I'm feeling aloud, Chairperson. That's what I had in mind. And what also I picked up, but I didn't have a problem, let me say, was to reduce this business of redundancy. Loli would, in some paragraphs, say who, when she has mentioned that it's Mr. Vilakazi on top. Also, I understood that. And also, when she mentioned, because she also lifted the chapter in some area, and I also felt that could be correct. As a matter of emphasis, because as a matter of fact, the chairperson is the leader of the committee. So with me, I think we can agree on pinning down the department, saying the department, because you have got with other departments, and the majority of them, chairperson, they are acting so. Well, so when now a particular person has been employed, he or she could say, no. And begins to ask from the departmental colleagues, who said that? No, but, and we wouldn't be able to trace, because this goes with commitments made by the department and entity.
Okay, honorable members, can we hear? Honorable Sibande?
Number one, I propose that we must have a consistency. Number two, I don't think that the Mzenzan is correct. Because, you see, in the preamble of these minutes, it's indicated that who were the reps of the department. Because on what you are raising, it means that we must be quoted as well, that members also said this and this. That won't be a minute anymore, because we are one team. And Mr. Weso is from one department, not from a different department.
To close this one, I'll advise that we avoid using names. We use offices, department, set, select committee, indicated that, and avoid names, please, for professionalism.
And so I think that was the decision that was taken, Loli. If you remember, that's why Honorable Sibande is raising it. And further, the clarification to say you've got all the people from the department on this page who were here. So inside, maybe if you want to remind yourself, this minute you can put them aside for yourself, because maybe for your reference when you do the follow-ups.
Mm.
But like we said the first time, we agreed that we don't quote. If we take decision, we take decision as committee members. And the department, what the, somebody who's responding is responding on behalf, or he or she is responding on behalf of the department. So let's leave it at that. So the you're going to amend all the pages. Honorable Subant?
Last one, on page 12, paragraph 2. Which says, the whip of the committee requested that the meeting should focus on the topic and at hand, and also pleaded that there should be respect towards. You see, I've got a problem with this paragraph at all, as it is. Because the perception of the people who were not there in the meeting, it can have its own interpretations as if the things which we're discussing we were out of order.
It is clear. The concern is clear, Honorable. When we say the committee requested that the meeting should focus on the topic. Yeah, for somebody who wasn't in the house, we'll think that there was boxing in that meeting. Boxing in not in fist, but in words.
Mm.
But can members allow that we take this paragraph out? Yeah, some other things are not for recording. If we write minutes, other things are not. You can't write everything on the minutes. So other things we must take them out. We must neglect them. Things for. You know. So thank you, Honorable Sibande. It was page 12.
Chairperson, I also agree with the sentiment. I don't want to draw the meeting back, but let's also note that there is also a public kind of an entity. If my English is correct, your parliamentary monitoring group, the PMG, who also after 48 hours would post the very same minutes, word for word, in their website. So, as we say, we should be mindful of whatever. Let's also be mindful of the fact that. In a majority of cases, our community do not bother, in fact, they do not even know that we have our own minutes, but our communities, from time to time, they get hold of what we discuss here, through PMG website. I'm just, yes, they record the verbatim. So I'm saying maybe it's correct that when these things have to be done on the spot, we say off record so that it be noted to avoid a situation where we would be labeled to have doctored the proceedings of the meeting.
Thank you, Loli. Don't stress off the record, because if you are writing minutes, definitely the understanding is other things. You can't write every little thing. So you must, when you write minutes, that's why we have this time, correcting minutes. But we are saying not everything that must be recorded. Like what I was saying, the sizes, we can't record. It was just off the record. The sizes, the what. The other things we just say, you know. Honorable Mabich.
All the minutes should go through an amendment before they are distributed to
Thank you very much. Can we have a mover for adoption? Yeah, we, Honorable Sibande, we were on 12. Do you still have something
no.
on? Okay.
And of course, we are moving. I mean, we are adopting.
With amendment.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, who moved? Honorable Mabija moved and seconder? Oh, Mr. Sib. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. Before we adjourn the meeting, my understanding is that next week we have a program. So on the program, it was saying we are going to Mitchell's Plain Labor Center. Mitchell's Plain Labor Center. You can go, PMG. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are done.